You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, November 19th, episode 3822. Good morning, horse world. Well, it's just me today. Jamie had a horse situation that she had to help with. Nothing bad, don't worry. Just a last-minute thing that she had to help a friend with. So we've moved today's guest to a time in the future, and I have a fun show planned for you today. But before we get to that, a reminder, only 3 days left to get your songs and poems in for holiday week. We got a number of poems, but not one song yet, which is very unusual. So get your creative talents flowing and get those in. Our sponsors have donated a total of 25 prizes worth over $2,000, including Cavallo, Dreamers and Schemers, Espoir, Kelly Herd Jewelry, Kentucky Performance Products, Trafalgar Books, U.S. Riders, Zero Proof, Weatherbeat, and Spalding Labs. You have until Friday to get your voicemail, songs, and poems in. You get triple the entries for the prize drawing if you do a song or a poem. And there'll be a link in the show notes. If you record it on your phone, you can get it to us through the link in the show notes right there on your phone, or use the voicemail line. Go to horseradionetwork.com and click on the voicemail on the right side of the page. Just talk into the voice, talk into your phone, and it automatically comes to us. Next week, we'll have the sign up open for everyone to register for the prizes. For today, we have so many listeners that have joined us since COVID. I thought we'd share some of the amazing Radiothon interviews from the past, including Charlie Daniels, Christian Bush of Sugarland, Peggy Rowe, Mike Rowe's mom, and Martin Clunes. If you have not heard these, you're in for a treat. If you have, there's so much fun to listen to again. I had a great time putting this together. We'll be getting started with Charlie Daniels right after these messages from today's sponsors. Horse lovers, are you ready to maximize your savings? Then listen up. The State Line Tack Rewards Program is your ticket to exclusive deals and discounts. Joining is absolutely free, and you'll earn points with every purchase. These points unlock member-only coupons, special promotions, and early access to our biggest sales. Plus, you'll be automatically entered into the monthly prize drawings. Redeem your hard-earned points for discounts on everything State Line Tack offers: saddles, bridles, riding apparel, supplies, and more. Don't miss out on these incredible savings. Visit statelinetack.com to sign up today and start earning rewards. And of course, next week is Black Friday. I'm sure they have something up their sleeves for that as well. Check back.
Non-GMO whole food nutrition is the basis of the entire Daily Dose Equine program. We never forget that natural is better and simplicity is key. Daily Dose Equine uses non-GMO whole food ingredients like alfalfa, timothy, peas, sunflower seeds, and flax. Daily Dose Equine doesn't use fillers, bulking agents, or leftovers from other industries, so you can feed less yet improve body condition and energy. And our feeds are free from chemical residues and glyphosate. Find the perfect formulation for your horse at DailyDoseEquine.com. Select Daily Dose Equine formulations are available nationwide through Chewy.com and TractorSupply.com.
Charlie Daniels was our first guest on the first Radiothon ever, back when it was 12 hours live in 2015. 10 years ago, we did this first.
Well, I would like to introduce and welcome a man that I am a huge fan of. He's a musician, singer, and songwriter known for his contributions to country, bluegrass, and southern rock music. Perhaps known for one country hit, maybe you've heard of it, The Devil Went Down to Georgia, and multiple other songs that he has written and performed with. He's performed with names like Elvis Presley, Bob Dylan. He was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry on January 24th, 2008, and the Musicians Hall of Fame and Museum in 2009. He is the Grammy-winning artist, Charlie Daniels of the Charlie Daniels Band.
Well, hi, Charlie. Welcome to our special. We're so happy to have you as our first guest today.
Well, I'm honored to be with you. Thank you for having me. Now,
Glenn,
let
me stop you. You do not address him as Charlie. You address him as Mr. Daniels, okay?
No. You're wrong. No, Charlie. Everybody, even little kids call me Charlie. I prefer it.
Okay.
My daddy's name is Mr. Daniels, and I never forgot that, but I'm Charlie.
Well, you know why I think I can call him Charlie is because I saw you at the Grand Ole Opry for the first time at the Ryman Auditorium. So anybody that sees you there can call you Charlie, in my opinion.
That's absolutely right. Anybody didn't see me there in comedy show.
So let me ask you this. With your tour schedule, which is incredible, do you still get time to get back to Twin Pines Ranch and the horses and ride and do all that?
I don't do as much as I used to. I haven't roped in a long time. I used to do a lot of team roping. But, of course, age has something to do with that, too. I'm not as able to just get up in the morning, go jump on a horse and stay all day as I used to be, but I still enjoy getting on. I got a couple of nice old using horses that I say old, they're not so old, but the boys are pretty careful about what they let me ride anymore. I'm in Leroy here. You know, they got one busted down pretty good before I get on him. And yeah, I do get a chance to ride. We'll go out and I'll get together with guys. We'll go out and spend a while riding West Wine up there. I still enjoy it very much.
Now, this special is all about everybody's favorite horsey holiday memories at Christmas time. Did you get to spend a lot of Christmases at the ranch? Would you go out and ride? Was that part of the tradition?
I'm always going to be home at Christmas time. That's the one thing. I'm going to have all my people. I got a lot of people with kids and grandkids with me. And I'm going to be there, and they're going to be there at Christmas. If no other time of the year, we're going to be there at Christmas, always. And I used to do quite a bit of riding around Christmas time because that was my time off. And, yeah, I would get together with the guys and go out and ride cold weather riding, you know, be bundled up real good. I remember one time I came home from Hawaii, and I was my time was all boogered up like it always is when you come out of those time zones. And I had laid down and took a nap. And I woke up, it was just starting to get twilight, and it was snowing. And I said, I got to get on a horse. So I called out in the morning. I said, you guys got anything to do in the back pasture? And y'all woke them up to something. I said, how about selling me up something? Sell a whole fat guy, I'll be down in a minute. I did, and we rode back. And riding when it's snowing, I mean, not a blizzard, but when it's just kind of, you know, when snow's kind of coming down and you hear the horses who's kind of padding on top of it. And that is a wonderful experience. Anybody's never done it, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. Now, do you live, do you have a house at the ranch, or is the house separate?
Oh, yeah.
Ranch? Yeah? Okay.
No. I live on the ranch.
Oh,
that's my home. I've been there for 35 years, something like that now.
Well, tell us about the ranch. I'm curious to know, where is it? And, you know, tell us a little bit about what goes on there.
It's in Wilson County, Tennessee, about 30 miles east of Nashville, off of Interstate 40.
Yeah.
As far as what goes on there, we have been through several phases. Our main interest was horses for quite a long time. And we went through, using horses, basically roping horses and that sort of thing. And we got into cutting horses pretty heavy for a while. Did a lot of breeding down at the King Ranch and had some really good cutting blood on our place. But basically now we are actually more into cattle, into horned herbards right now than we are horses. We keep horses. We still stand in a stud and we're still dealing in horses, but we raise a lot of cattle. Cattle prices have gone up, as I'm sure you're aware of, tremendously here the last little while. So we get into them. So we'll always have some horses, always have some good horses around.
Did your kids get into it?
Oh, yeah. My son did. My whole family did. My wife and myself. And in fact, even before we had the ranch, we got into horseback riding. We used to have to lease. Well, not so much lease, but just rent a place to, you know, to keep them, to board them. We used to board them. And that's one of the main things that we went looking for, our own place, our own, with some acreage. That was one of the main things that we wanted. We wanted some place to go and ride our horses. And before we even moved to Twin Pines, there was a double wide trailer out there. And we used to go out and spend the weekend there and ride. That was a big deal with my whole family.
So you married well, then. You got a woman that'll spend her weekend in a double wide. She must like horses.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome. Done a week anywhere. And I'm the same with her. We've been married 51 years. So
we get
along pretty good.
Yeah, I would say.
I guess so.
And I bet horses and having the ranch and having the family around really, really helps all of that too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a great way for us to spend time together. Of course, at the time, we didn't think so much about it. It was just a natural part of our lives. It's what we all enjoyed doing, is make sure everybody had a good riding horse and, just go out and saddle up, ride around the property and enjoy ourselves. But it was like, it was just such a natural thing for us to do. We didn't think about it so much as recreation as we did. It was just part of our lives.
It's a lifestyle, absolutely. Now, I gotta thank you, because for two reasons. I'm a Georgia-born girl. I grew up in Georgia. And I'm now in an Air Force family. And obviously, I think to enter the high school system in Georgia...
Charlie, she's understating it. Her husband is an F-16 fighter pilot, so...
Mercy.
Yes, he's really cool. But what I was going to say, Glenn, is that to enter the high school system in Georgia, you actually have to recite and sing all lyrics from Devil Went Down to Georgia. So I passed that test. And I could still do it. I knew you were coming on. It's been in my head for days. You just like you don't get into school if you don't you don't have any friends if you don't know every lyric to Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Oh, and mercy. Where's your husband stationed, by the way?
We're in Phoenix, Arizona right now. There's no riding in the snow here, but we hope to retire. When he retires, we'll be going to Oklahoma. We already bought about 12 acres there, so we're ready to do what you're doing.
Well, I'm married to an Okie. My wife's from Tulsa.
She's from Tulsa? Oh, my gosh.
She's from Tulsa. Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
my son was born in Hillcrest Medical Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
No
I got
kidding.
Deep roots in Oklahoma. Oh, yeah, we used to live there. We were married there, like I said, 51 years ago. So,
oh my gosh,
deep roots in Oklahoma.
No kidding. Happy anniversary. We're just going to have to be best friends now, because obviously we have so much in common.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to thank you too for all that you do for the troops. I know you're really supportive of our military, and I do appreciate that.
Well, it is an honor to support our military. I've done it all my life. I was 5 years old when Pearl Harbor was bombed, and my formative years were during the Second World War. And the war was very serious to us, because I lived on a seaport town, and we had shipping going over to Europe to the war effort, and they were sunk just off our coast by German U-boats, and sometimes it was so close, I never saw it, but I've heard some of the grown people said that it was so close at times you could see the fires of battle from our beaches. So we took the war very seriously. We never knew what the Nazis might try to bring it on shore, and I learned, I say this every night to the crowd, I learned very early in my life that only two things protect America, and that's the grace of God and the United States military. It's that way being it. Be that way, it's that way now, and it will be that way as long as we remain a free and sovereign nation. So I'm very beholden to the military. I always have been, always will be.
Well, I just appreciate you showing that to them as well. But I got to ask you, being you're a Grammy Award winning singer, you must have a favorite Christmas song that you sing with the family. I don't know, at Christmas time, you sing it to your grandkids, anything like that?
I don't so much sing, but a song that has been part of my wife will put, we have Christmas records. Of course, I've got three Christmas records out, so we play them. But
they get to hear you record.
Always, always been part of Christmas in our house is Nat King Cole's Christmas song, the Chestnut Roasting song. I can't imagine Christmas without it. It's just natural. I mean, to walk in a house and she does an incredible job at decorating. She has 5 Christmas trees, and she just really gets into it. And it's just we're a very traditional family. We have traditions that we do year after year. And one of them is, doing a lot of decorating and putting the music on and listening to it. And that song, if I had to name one song, it would probably be that one.
Wow.
I always wondered if a family like of an artist like yourself, of a singer and a musician, if those families sit around the tree at Christmas time and actually sing Christmas songs, or does that not happen because you're tired of singing?
Well, it's not because we get tired of singing. I just don't. It's just not something we particularly
do.
I mean,
yeah.
We break out and sing a song or something, but not in any kind of an organized way or anything.
Right.
It's not really part of our Christmas tradition to sing, you know, sing gospel songs. Going to church on Christmas Eve always is.
Yeah.
We go to early service on Christmas Eve, and we come back, and we get back home. Our church service starts about 4 in the afternoon or something. We get back home. We always have a bunch of people over for Christmas Eve, and something we've been doing for a lot of years. That's part of our tradition, and, you know, just things that we do year after year after year, and it just wouldn't seem like Christmas time without them.
So I've got to ask you, Charlie, Mr. Daniels. So if I've got a 2-year-old and he's just 2.5 now, so we're starting to realize that he's going to start to understand what Christmas is. And what do you think the one most important tradition that you guys do is? Because my husband and I are trying to kind of start to figure out what we're going to do on a yearly basis. What really means a lot to your family?
Having your son. Is it a boy, you said?
It's a little boy, son? Yes, sir.
Okay, teaching your son what the true meaning of Christmas is. It's the birth of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't teach him, he's not going to know. The world's not going to teach him, but that's what it's about. That's what we try to remember at my house. That's what we try to keep first and foremost is this is the celebrating the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's what we're doing this for, no matter what anybody else wants to call it. If they want to say Merry Christmas or not, or they want to, whatever they want to do, we will follow our traditions and we will follow our beliefs. And the truth of the matter is this is Christ's birthday. So let's keep that first and foremost. It's the most important thing you can teach him.
I don't think we can add anything to that. Thank you,
right.
Charlie Daniels, for joining us and leading off our Horsey Holiday Celebration for 12 hours live today. We appreciate you stopping by, and I hope you get a ride in this year on Christmas.
Thank you so much. God bless, and Merry Christmas.
Next up is a friend of Jamie's from her radio days in Atlanta, and it was super fun to hear them catch up in this radiothon interview from 2016, Christian Bush of Sugarland.
Well, it's the holiday season, and it is the time where we, reconnect, I guess. It's been a couple years since I've talked to our next guest, and just to give you a brief background, Glenn, Christian Bush and I became friends when I was 18 years old. I actually have been stalking him for 2 years prior to that. I got a fake ID so I could go to Billy Pilgrim shows. That was a band he was in, a band called Billy Pilgrim. And Christian had this long blonde hair and these big blue eyes. And he was in a band with this tall, dark, and handsome guy. And I was their number one fan. Excuse me. Went to all the shows I could. And when I became 18, I started working for them selling CDs. And as I got older, genius me, right? Because I'm that girl. Who do I date in the band? The other guy. Who's the other guy? Who's the other guy? Exactly. You don't know. However, the one I didn't date went on to super famous international stardom in a band called Sugarland. And fortunately, that relationship ended and we remained friends. So that's the good thing that came out of it. So we welcome to the show Christian Bush. Hey, Christian.
Hey, Jamie. How are you?
That's been the story of her life, Christian.
Hey.
I've never really heard her say it out loud in like less than a paragraph. That was great.
I could have gone on, but I figured I'd keep it short. We're, you know, on a time crunch here. You don't have all day.
That's perfect.
Well, fortunately, we did remain friends. And part of my Christmas holidays, every year for Christmas, usually on December 23rd, Christian and I would go Christmas shopping. And
we would.
Yeah. And for some reason, we always on that day, every single year, would go Christmas shopping. And then it got to the point where all of a sudden, I wasn't the only person who was with him. Like, all of a sudden, he's famous. And so we really haven't gone Christmas shopping since you got super famous. You don't need to be mobbed in the mall or whatever. But so that's definitely one of my better holiday memories that I have. And I don't even know. I mean, I guess you remember that.
Of course I do. Why don't we keep doing that? Except that, yeah, it's kind of hard for me now. But
yeah.
It doesn't mean we can't, like, sit in somebody's living room and, like, tear up the internet and go Christmas shopping online.
Amazon. Amazon.
Exactly. little drunk shop and never hurt anybody.
I know, right? Well, that was some of the best times ever for sure. And I do remember the one time we're in the mall together and we're walking around Lenox Square Mall and you said to me, not to be whatever, but just to let you know, I got my first check from Sugarland and I can pretty much buy anything. Okay, you're super cool now.
It was a weird feeling, you know, like to have a job where you get paid nothing forever and you're doing the same job you were doing the day before and they paid you check that had more zeros than I've ever seen in my whole life. And, you know, we never took advances. So in the music business, they can either pay you up front or you can wait to see if you win. And if you win, they pay you all of it at the end, you know. And I totally remember that. Shopping.
Yeah, it was very memorable, that's for sure. Well, in the years that we've been friends, what I wanted to know, because this is the Horse Radio Network, I wanted to know if you remember meeting my horse.
I do, and I was really confused because it was inside of a city.
Yeah.
So you were like, here, meet my horse. And I was like, well, but this is your house. You live inside Atlanta, in Metro Atlanta. Why do you have a horse in your house?
She keeps them in the living room still. They're still in the living room.
No, we should have known then what was going to happen to you.
The backstory on that is I was about to move to Kentucky the next morning and Christian had come to say goodbye. And instead of driving way outside the perimeter of Atlanta to go pick up my horse and then drive back in and move to Kentucky, I just went and got him and put him in my backyard, which was my mom's like pool area. And this guy comes over and you must have thought I was the craziest person on the planet.
Well, I mean, you were definitely unique.
You're so polite. I mean... Now, Christian, you are the country Christmas guy. You have written more Christmas songs. And I remember 15 years ago, you put out a Christmas album. Are you still doing that?
I try to put out as much Christmas music as possible whenever I can do it. You know, I kind of love Christmas music because I'm already kind of a hopeless romantic, sappy type character. And with Christmas music, you can even double down on that. Like, you can just go straight for making people cry.
Yes. What is Christmas like for you, by the way? Walk me through your day.
My Christmas is, you know, sentimental. So I still have a tree. And I'm not crazy enough to have, like, more than one tree yet. You know, some people do that now.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, we got to have a tree that's decorated like this and a tree like that.
In every room.
But... yeah, in every room. Now, that's not me, but I bought the house that I live in squarely for the fireplace and squarely so that I could only use it during Christmas. Which, by the way, has anybody else thought how weird that is? Like, you're burning the tree and you're looking at the tree. It's like it's like eating a chicken and egg biscuit. It's weird. But I love waking up. I make my kids get up and hang out in pajamas and open presents. And then I sleep. It's a mandatory nap in the middle of the day. And, you know, since I've had kids, I stop traveling great distances to see family. I make them travel great distances to see me.
So do you have a favorite holiday Christmas food?
Ooh, my favorite holiday Christmas food. I think it has morphed over time. I used to be, and I don't know if anybody else likes this, but I used to really like that egg custard, which is somewhere between pudding and a milkshake. And it's not really eggnog, but it's a little bit stronger.
Okay, that does sound gross. Is there any alcohol in it? I hope not.
No.
Okay.
But you don't need the sugar will get you so high that you won't even know what to do with yourself. But so I'm a big fan of that. In the last number of years, I've been sent from Wisconsin, the strudels, the Christmas strudels from a friend of mine. And I didn't think I would like them, but now I do. Now, this is like Christmas, like the 500 level class. This is not like, oh, I like the cinnamon rolls or the whatever on Christmas morning. No, this is heavy duty. This is, you get like, you need cold brew coffee to go with it just to stay alive.
That's funny. And do you have a favorite Christmas drink, alcoholic drink?
And song. I want to know his favorite Christmas song.
Yeah, Christmas song. Well, my favorite Christmas drink is probably, an old fashioned, but that's pretty much my drink.
Oh my God, are you 80? I don't know anybody that has my parents didn't even drink old fashions. My grandparents did.
You know what? I'm going to help you right now.
Okay.
Because you don't. Yeah, I'm going to help you. What you're going to do is on Christmas Eve, once you're done putting together all the things you need to put together, you are then going to make yourself an old fashioned with one giant ice cube. You're going to sit next to the fire. And you're gonna look at the Christmas tree, and you're gonna listen to Nat King Cole, side one of his Christmas record, and you're gonna die because you're so happy.
All will be right with your world, Glenn.
That's right, or I'll be passed out. One or the other.
Now, is it wrong of me to ask? Because I'm sure I'm not the only girl. What the hell is an old fashioned?
Go ahead, explain it to her.
An old fashioned is a lowball glass, right? It's a bourbon drink, so it's Kentucky bourbon. I like to drink Woodford.
Good man.
And they have one ice cube in it, and it has a little bit of bitters, and then you have the peel of an orange that you then kind of put a lighter to and get it to burn just a little bit. And then you rub the orange around the rim of the glass and drop the orange in it, the orange peel. And
see,
so
Glenn,
it tastes like bourbon. It's a bourbon drink. It's awesome.
Honest to God, this is something our great-grandparents drink while eating bush beans.
No, but see, this is what happens when you get rich and famous. You have a bartender come into your house and burn orange peels and put them in your drink. That's all I heard was, and then, James, make me another old-fashioned.
You know, my wife and I spent years trying to figure out what the hell are bitters anyway. I mean, we just could never quite figure out what bitters were. I mean, I know what they are, but I didn't know what they were. You know what I mean?
You just buy a bottle of it, right?
You buy a bottle of it. It's like, well, what do they grow on trees? Where do you get bitters? You know, it's
like. Now, Christian, let me move to the country song. Tell our Christmas song. What's your favorite Christmas song? I got to keep Glenn on track here.
My favorite Christmas song, strangely enough, is Frosty the Snowman. I have never recorded Frosty the Snowman. I don't know why, but it is one of my favorite Christmas songs. And that's a really simple, weird answer, but that's the truth. I write a lot of Christmas songs, and none of them are as good as Frosty, but they each have their own special charm.
Gotcha. That was not the answer I was expecting, but I'll take it.
What were you expecting?
I don't know.
What's your favorite Christmas song?
Billy Pilgrim did a version of Oh Come All You Faithful one time, and I think that one was stuck with me.
Ah, yes. We also did a really great First Noel.
That's true. Didn't you sing that at like some basketball game or something? I don't know. At Christmas time,
oh, yeah.
I can't remember.
We totally did.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool. We put out a Christmas record at Sugarland, and they gave us a Christmas special, and it's still running today. Like I think Jennifer does it again, and I think she did it a couple weeks ago. But you know, you get obsessed with that kind of. You know, Christmas music is always meant to be in the background. It's never meant to be in the foreground. You know, it's what you put on while you're engaging in doing the things you do around Christmas. You don't sit down and go, ooh, listen to this, right? But what's awesome about Christmas music is that it's the most memorable music ever. Mm-hmm. You know, they were always written in June or July because the writers and the artists had to record them then. In order to get them released in October so that they were on the radio or on the shelves to be purchased in December. So it's very interesting to me every time you hear a Christmas song to close your eyes and imagine what swimming pool, you know, these people will decide.
I think I spoke to you one time. I called you or we were talking and you're like, yeah, just writing Christmas music. It's July.
Yeah, it is. And My newest favorite one was the one I did last year. I wrote it with a country singer named Chris Young and a couple other friends of mine. And I had brought in this idea that, you know, sometimes Christmas can be stressful because you have your family around you, and maybe you don't always have your family around you. So suddenly they can stress you out completely. And there's a point usually in a family gathering like that where suddenly people just start drinking. just to provide a little bit of buffer between each other, you know, and you inevitably slip on the banana peel, you know, and somebody says something they shouldn't or does something they shouldn't do. And it's just the story of every single family. So we wrote that song last year. It's called Thinking About Drinking for Christmas.
And we'll be playing that shortly just for fun.
Yes.
See?
Obviously, Sugarland, internationally famous monster country band, and you guys have taken a break. Jennifer had a kid. What's going on with you guys?
Well, Jennifer had a kid and got married again.
Yes.
And I joke that it's sometimes it's like two kids. And but she did, and is raising a family, and decided she wanted to go. And as you remember, way back when. Go back and start singing by herself the way she was when I met her and kind of auditioned her into Sugarland. She wanted to go take a stab at it again. And she's had a couple of albums of that. And those are kind of coming to a close here pretty soon, I think. And, you know, I think it's about time for some more Sugarland music.
We all agree.
All right. Well, you heard it here first.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I think that we have two albums left with our record company for sure. So it's just a matter of time. It just depends on when. And, you know, as if anybody out there has families, you know, you got to be very patient with how you decide to manage your time. And as a parent, as a working parent, you know, you got to be careful with that. And I respect it.
I cannot thank you enough for coming on. As long as we've been friends, I've never ever asked to have you on or interview you or even really, you know, kind of talk about you. So it's real special that you agreed to do this, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate you taking this much time out of your day. I mean, Jamie Lynn Spears is waiting for you. Come on.
And then I woke up from my dream. Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you both. And of course, Jamie, anytime, you know, I feel very lucky and grateful to have the life that's happened. And I certainly would love to share my stories anytime you want to hear me yap about them.
All right. We'll talk to you Tuesday.
I love it.
And last up, from 2016, Debbie Lauk spoke to the amazing Martin Clunes of Doc Martin and his special on horses from over there in England. I think you're going to enjoy this a lot.
Now, we are very happy to have on the line Martin Clunes. Debbie, take it away.
Oh, hi, Martin. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine, thank you. I was miles away.
I'm so glad you're here. Oh, I'm glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here then, really. That was a Weatherbeater commercial, which is very appropriate for the UK. So let me tell a little bit of our American audience who you are, if they don't already know. But you're the UK's most consistently popular television actor, hands down. Yes, you are. And starring in the long-running Doc Martin about a socially challenged doctor. It's not you. In Cornwall, England, Martin and Monty appeared together on Martin's Horsepower, an investigation into man's relationship with horses. So here you go, Monty and Martin.
Hi, Monty. How are you? I'm here, Martin. Can you hear me?
I can perfectly, yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How's the family?
We're all grand, thank you. We're all here.
Thank you for the afternoon and birthday party and everything. I hope you got your rope. She has it over there, that's for sure.
Yes, she does. Yeah, I'm not sure whether to arm her with it just yet, but yeah.
Okay.
We got it, but thank you so much.
I have to tell the listening audience that wherever I go in the world, my team, anytime there's a controversy of any sort, they say to me, now, Monty, settle down. just think, what would Martin Clunes do? And you're speaking with the nicest man in the world. This guy is just such a hero for me, and I enjoy every minute that I have with him.
Well, Monty, shucks.
Now tell me how Ronnie and Bruce are.
Oh, they're grand, thank you. They're really well. They're kind of, we haven't had massive rain. We had a couple of days, but we're all right. I'm not in feather panic mode. Usually when it's really muddy, I wash their legs 2 or 3 times a week because the feathers get brittle bits of mud and then they snap off and then we're all embarrassed.
Now, for those who don't know, let me jump in there, because my in-laws are named Bruce and Ronnie. We're not talking about them. No, we're talking about Martin's Clydesdales, right?
Yeah.
Two Clydesdales that I had the pleasure to work with when they were babies and then came all the way through with them. And I had the distinct pleasure to watch, I think, Ronnie a few weeks ago.
Oh, no, Bruce, that's Bruce.
Bruce in full dressage in their menage there on their property. And it was a sight to see. I couldn't believe how professional this horse looked out there as a Clydesdale doing maneuvers in the dressage world. It was just great.
Yeah, we're so proud of him. He's a real trier. I think it's that breed thing. It's what Clydesdales do, isn't it? They put their head down and get on with whatever challenge you throw at them.
That's true. And they get along with people. It's a good thing that they're so nice because they're so big. They would not be nice to be around if they were.
No, you wouldn't want to make enemies of them. No.
No, not at all. But I think they have some questions for you because I just gave them my fantasy ride. I was thrown this morning and I believe I did the right thing, but they're going to ask you the same question. Maybe Debbie's got that one.
Well, that's right. That's exactly it. We wanted to hear your fantasy ride too, Martin. We just heard Dad's, and it can be any horse, past or present, in any setting. Tell us what it looked like.
Well, okay. Am I allowed 2 horses? Because that's the fantasy element, is riding both of them.
Well, they're pretty tall. We'll give you 2 horses, yeah.
Thank you. Because it's the nice thing about driving them is you get to relate to 2 of them at a time. And I just wish there was a way of just hanging some sort of hammock between the 2 of them.
I just almost spit out my coffee.
It was so cute.
It's good. It can't, I suppose somebody must have tried all this, mustn't they, at some point in history?
I've never heard of that.
I'm sure.
There'll be drawings somewhere.
Yeah, in a cave.
Yes. I suppose, yes. I bet somebody's done it,
Yeah,
Monty, haven't you done it in your stuntman days?
I have actually gone on to a team and gone down in the middle like you see and then pulled it up so that the girl wouldn't die. And then some actor stepped in and got the girl. But I did it as a teenager a few times. It was not a hammock, I assure you, and it was pretty scary. But Martin and I have had some good times, and in the early days of his driving Ronnie and Bruce at my demonstrations, there was some poor lady in a wheelchair that got a real startle when he went whizzing by her at about 2 inches from her wheelchair. And
we left her in it, bro. We left her in it.
We did. Yeah. We did. And it turns out that she was injured in a hunting accident and was a very good rider in her day. And she was laughing about the whole thing.
Yes, she was. She was tickled, yeah.
Yeah, she was great. And we've had some really good times, and I don't want it to be the end. I just want the listeners to know that I did the only remote control loading that I've ever done with Martin.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a horse that was, I think, 2 years or something. He wouldn't load on a trailer. And I just stepped back and told Martin what I would suggest he did. And he loaded the horse in about 3.5 or 4 minutes. And the owners were aghast. They were just absolutely standing there with their mouths open. And the audience loved it because they always think, oh, that's Monty Roberts and he can do it, but nobody else can. And there was Martin Clunes loading this atrocious horse in no time at all. It was so much fun.
It was fun, yes. I can't claim any credit for it. Just following instructions, which is... That's how my life goes, Monty. You've met my wife.
Well, that's me, too. That's another world for me.
Martin, I have to ask you, Martin, have Ronnie and Bruce, since they were started right there in the round pen, iconically, on Dad's tour, have they ever appeared on Doc Martin?
No, they haven't. I don't think we've ever had a single horse. Which, yes, we might need to address that.
I think so. They need SAG cards first. That's true, Dana.
we have to speak with Martin's wife, Philippa, on that, because she sort of runs the show, doesn't she?
She's the boss, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You work together on that. Well, can you sneak in?
She's the producer. Yeah,
that's true. We have to sneak them in.
You know that Philippa told me you can get ready to see Doc Martin do an Epley maneuver, which we went over while I was there, about how it's helped me with my balance vertigo.
That's right.
And so Doc Martin is supposed to do an Epley maneuver on somebody
in
upcoming episodes.
Okay, stay tuned for the Epley maneuver for Doc Martin.
We're magpies for bits of procedure, medical procedure. Anything we can do is shoehorn it into our program.
Well, in all fairness, Martin, haven't you had people claim that you helped them with their medical needs?
And people have just gone and checked. Yes, there's a couple of people just went back to their GP and said, just can you check this lump, please? Because, yes, there was a guy with throat cancer who thankfully was, you know, got it properly diagnosed and was treated and recovered. But, he said it was down to us. There was an episode.
Isn't that something?
Saving lives.
Isn't that something? And I can assure you, I'm sure he's not a doctor, really, but...
I'm not, but I've got a lot of enthusiasm, which will make up for me.
That's it.
Yeah.
You really get to say that. I get to play one on TV. Like the iconic commercial over here. Yeah. And does Philippa ride the horses, too? Does she ride the big Clydes?
Oh, yes. She rides dressage is her thing. And she's been having that problem of trying to find the right horse for a long time, but he turned up 3 or 4 months ago. His name's Aldo. He's Irish sport, thoroughbred cross, and he's about, how old is Aldo? 9? He's 9, and he's really nice. He's really nice, and they're getting on so well. So all the misery of the wrong horse keep coming around.
And the two of you would be so interested to hear that Philippa has been on our courses in England and really takes her horsemanship seriously right from the ground up with, you know.
She loves it. She really does. Yeah, she's still a great one for studying it. And she goes off on dressage weekends and things. And this is what she's been missing, but she's back in the swing of it now.
Yeah, fun.
Oh,
fun.
That's great.
Are we going to see more horsepower in the future?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I would love it. I'd go on doing it forever. But, you know, you just kind of have to sneak these things past them because they say, no, that's been done now. There's a talk of doing something with the jockey club, the regulating board of the horse racing in England.
Mm.
And maybe getting a sort of, because that's quite... You know, that all seems to go on behind closed doors. And I think they're quite ready to.
The two of you should know that Doc Martin and Martin Clunes on the side has been all over the world doing things for animals, including whales and fishes of the sea and the ecology completely. But all around the islands of England, speaking to the issues of the animals, it's just been fantastic what he's done, and
did the islands of Australia this year, which was quite a blast. Yeah,
this is sort of your travel log. You get to do these wonderful trips because you have to go film them, right?
I know. Poor me.
I know. I want that job. I have to be funny, though, and you're too funny, so I can't get that job. People enjoy. I know from the U.S., I wish we had more. access to you, but people are starting to get to know you over here, and they will love you like, you know, one of our most endeared actors, I'm sure, because that's the way it is in England. And we're very excited to see more of you over here. And it's so good to hear someone who's a genuine horse person, you know, who really has them in his yard and takes good care of them, loves them, and it comes through on the TV in horsepower, certainly, Martin. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, we love our horses.
Yeah,
I know you do. And people will love them too. Google Ronnie and Bruce and Martin Clunes, and you'll see the cutest relationship going on with these guys. I don't know. Now, do Ronnie and Bruce, do they get jealous of each other or anything, do you think?
No, they don't, actually. No, they're very different personalities. Bruce is a real worker, and he's as honest as the day long. Ronnie's quite cheeky. So if he sees Bruce being taken off to do something, he's like, well, you know, good, you go do it, I don't care. It's quite bullshit.
Fantastic.
You two girls would really understand when I say that John Forsythe is gone and reincarnated is Martin Clunes.
That's nice.
He's the John Forsythe for me of the world. And I just so admired that man and what he did in all of his work and how he loved his horses.
I did too, Dad. You're absolutely right. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for calling us girls, first of all. Thank you.
Love it.
Love it. You love it, Jamie? Thank you. And thank you to gentlemen for joining us today on Horsemanship
Radio.
It's my
birthday today. I'm 55 today.
And I was going to say, happy birthday?
Thank you very much. I'm not going to do 55 press-ups though, Monty.
Oh.
No, but I just realized that you could be my son, you know. It's amazing.
Hey, my bro, Martin Clunes. Hi.
Yeah. Well, I'm just one of the girls, so you guys go ahead.
All right. Well,
next
happy
generation.
Birthday. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. It's great to speak to you all.
And thank you.
Good, Martin. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Take care, Monty.
Up next from Radiothon 2018 is Mike Rowe's mom, Peggy. She was so sweet, and the stories are so good.
Okay, well, we recorded this a little while ago, let's be honest, and about a week ago, and delightful is the word that you have to use. Peggy Rowe is the mother of Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, and he does the podcast The Way I Heard It, that one that has over 40 million downloads a month. Yeah, that one.
A few more than ours.
Just a few. But we're catching up. Well, his mom was a horse crazy girl and adult and just wrote a book called About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball Obsessed Mother. And Amazon has it. It's a fantastic book. And please welcome Peggy Rowe.
Well, hi, Peggy. Thank you so much for joining us on our holiday special today.
Good morning. It's my pleasure. I assure you, I hear that you talk a lot about horses, and I'm excited.
All we talk about is horses every day on the show. All day. So you're...
Where were you when I was growing up?
I read the book yesterday, and you have the story of every teenage girl that's now listening to this show that is now a little bit older. They all grew up wanting a horse. Their family wasn't involved in horses. And then all of a sudden, something happens that the dad goes, oh, I better get this girl a horse. And you grew up that way. That was your story.
You know, from the time I was born, I think I was born with a passion for horses because I galloped around the neighborhood. We lived in a suburban neighborhood, and I galloped through the neighbors' yards and over the ditch in front of the house, and I jumped the bird baths, and it was all about horses. I think I thought I was a horse for the first 4 years of my life. And it was difficult for my parents because, as you said, they were not involved with horses at all.
No, there's just something that happens to us women, that girls that are born with this bug of horses. And I come from a very non-horsey family too. And I was born with that same thing, just born loving horses. And my parents, where did this come from? So you kind of had that experience as well, huh?
Oh, I certainly did. And, you know, the thing is, I did not have access to an actual real horse for many years. I guess I was about maybe 10 when I had my first experience on a real horse. And, As I say in my book, it was a more spiritual experience than church could ever have been. It was as though I was born to be on this horse. It was wonderful.
Was that
the culmination of all my dreams? It was.
Yeah.
Oh, you did read
the book. I did read the book, your first ever pony, Chico.
Yeah, Chico was a cow pony. And he was very gentle, a perfect beginner horse. And I just loved him with all my heart.
There are pictures, Jamie, in the book of Peggy in her little cowboy boots and her little cowboy skirt. I mean, it was everything cowboy back then. That was so cool. And then tell us about your first two horses that you actually owned. When your dad decided that boys were going to become a problem, he decided horses needed to come into the picture. So it's like...
I think he decided that horses were the lesser of the two evils. And he arranged for me to meet an old friend of his he hadn't seen in years. But Bill had horses. And, of course, I fell in love with a big old gray part Percheron horse that had been named Jet, J-E-T, because when he was born, he was jet black.
I was going to ask about why Greg got the name Jet. You know, that doesn't usually happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And through the years, he did turn practically white, but he was kind of a dapple gray for a while and then a flea-bitten gray. And towards the end, he was white. But anyway, I was allowed to go around to Bill's stable and help him take care of the horses. And I got to ride and... As I said, I fell in love with Jet. He was my first love in my life, my first true love. I'm sure your listeners can identify, but it was all about Jet.
They know exactly what you're talking about. No question about it. Jamie, in the book, there's one of my favorite chapters, by the way. Of course, the whole book is pretty much about your mom. It's about Thelma. But Thelma, by the way, Jamie and I have this thing. I don't like baseball, and Jamie loves baseball. So we have a lot in common there, Peggy. So when the one story in the book, and I can't wait for the listeners to read this story, is when mom comes knocking and says, I want to ride. And I couldn't tell from the way you wrote that chapter whether you were appalled that mom was invading your territory or you were happy that she was taking an interest. I couldn't tell.
I was appalled. My mother was a take charge person. She was in charge from sunup to sundown. She made all the decisions in our family, all the important decisions. And believe me, if mom wanted it, we had it. If mom didn't want it, we didn't have it. So when she came to the stable one evening, I remember the scene in the book. I was doing some Spanish, studying my Spanish translation, and I was lying back on Jet's ample rump with my feet crossed on his mane when my mother came to the stable door. And she just announced that she had decided she was going to learn to ride. And I think the reason was she wanted to be a part of my world, but also she wanted to impress her friends. And as she said, none of my friends know how to ride. So she said, you can teach me to ride on Shaker. I've seen you doing it. I know I can do it. We can start tomorrow. So sure enough, I gave her a few lessons and she was a quick learner. I mean, of course, I thought she was ancient. She was in her 40s. But she was a quick learner. My mother could do anything she set her mind to.
Did you have the... I grew up, I had to have a responsibility, and then you had to get out of horses for a while. Did you ever get back in horses, or was this just strictly a childhood thing?
When we got married, we moved just across town. So we left our horses. I left my horses and then visited them whenever I had a chance. My dad was wonderful about caring for them. We had a child. We had a baby, our oldest son, Mike, and when he was 2 years old, we bought a house. Well, the house happened to be next door to the home where I grew up. It was next door to my parents' place, and they had maybe 17 acres. I taught school briefly and then had the great fortune to be able to stay home with our sons. And when I think Mike was about eight, they were like 8, 5, and 3, my father and my husband built a wonderful stable, just a big square building with 4 nice box stalls back to back and a tack room. They fenced in a lovely paddock in the front and then several acres in the back for pasture and later for a little outside course with jumps and so forth. So I still had my passion. And as the boys grew, I taught them to ride, but they never really shared my passion.
Obviously, we all know who your oldest is because he has a podcast and we've talked about his podcast on here and we're all very big fans of the way I heard it. But how is having boys and horses, how did you make that work?
Well, sometimes it worked to my advantage. Okay, let me set up a little scene for you. Mike would say, Mom, Cindy's having a party this evening and she's invited me and a lot of the other kids, can I go? And so I would say, gee, Mike, let me think about it, hon. Let's take a ride through the woods and we'll talk about it. And I got him on a horse that time.
Nice.
Yeah. And yes, but mostly they just did it to humor me. But then there came a time when they noticed girls. So from time to time, they would bring a girl around and get on a horse to impress her, you know.
Okay, or there you go.
If she liked horses, oh yeah, come on. Well, I'll let you ride a horse at my place. So, you know, we would go through that. But by and large, they did not really love horses ever the way that I did. I did have a little riding school for some time. And of course, my students were girls, preteens and teens. And I mean, well, they were the kind of kids that I was. I would see them sneaking a handful of molasses feed and sticking it in their pocket for later, just to smell it or to eat it. They would stuff some straw into their pockets to take home, maybe to put under their pillow. They just loved horses. Well, next thing I knew, suddenly my boys were interested in horses.
Funny how that works.
Were there, these lovely, lovely teenage girls. So the boys did pitch in then. I mean, they actually picked up pitchforks and pitched manure.
They did. So I have to ask you, before we run out of time, obviously this is our holiday special. We're talking all about the holidays and Christmas. With Mike, Scott, and Phil, did you guys have big Christmases? Was Christmas a big thing?
Oh, yes, it was. And we were very into our church. We were very involved in our church. So, you know, church was a big part of our Christmas. But let me tell you about the Christmas I remember.
Yeah.
Mike was about 8 years old. So the kids were like 8, 5, and 3. And we had just built our stable. I didn't have a horse yet. My oldest is 8 years old. And so naturally, I gave him what I had dreamt of when I was 8. We bought a pony for Mike.
Oh, no. Mike had a pony?
I had such great expectations. Michael would be so excited and, oh, my God, he would hug us and kiss us and thank us, you know, till the cows came home. So Christmas morning, so we had gone and picked up little Tammy. She was a wonderful pony. She was a cross between a Shetland and a Welsh. And so she was medium to small pony.
And she had attitude for days.
Yeah,
probably.
That's an attitude pony right there.
She, you know what? She had stamina and she had a wonderful disposition. You could do anything with this pony. So the plan was that we were to bring, it was a cold, blustery Christmas morning. Oh, it was probably close to zero in Baltimore. So my husband went out to the stable and led Tammy over to the fence, which was near our house. And the plan was that I would bring Mike to the window in our bedroom, open the curtain, and there would be Tammy and John, because the kids were still in their pajamas. Well, I opened the curtain, and there was Tammy with a big red bow on her forelock, and just had been groomed, you know, meticulously by me the night before. Mm-hmm. I opened the curtain, and I said, "Merry Christmas, Mike. Here's your own pony." And he said, Oh, that's nice, Mom. That's really nice. Okay, let's go back to the tree. There's a little gift I have.
That
he just was so disinterested. I couldn't believe it. And of course, I mean, it's like I had given him a set of fine china. That's how he acted. But later
Thanks,
in the day,
Mom.
we did all go out, and he did help groom Tammy, and he fed her, and he consented to get on her and ride her around, and he had the good graces to look excited. But his little brothers were more excited, so they all got pony rides. But anyway, that's the Christmas I most remember with horses.
How disappointing.
That ungrateful son of yours,
was.
Yeah.
Yes, well, but you know what? It led to wonderful things, because you can't keep one pony or one horse. They're herding animals, and they really do need a stable pal. So, of course, I had to get a stable pal a really nice horse for me.
Well,
so,
of course.
So that's what it led to.
And then, Peggy, what happens is, like, you've got Tammy in the barn, and then your horse, and then you go for a trail ride. Well, Tammy's all alone. So then you've got to get her a friend for when you're riding your horse. And then, like, you and Michael riding, and then the third horse is by itself in the barn. Like, oh my gosh, we have to get him one too. So then you end up with at least eight. I know how this is.
Well, you know what? Things did evolve, and we ended up with four, one for each stall. I have such wonderful memories. And when I was in my 50s, I developed arthritis. So I knew that when I could no longer mount without putting my horse into a gully and mounting from the side, I did give my last horse away. And it was a sad time. And that's when I began writing for horse magazines and, you know, covering horse shows and writing stories about, like, the Mounted Patrol in Baltimore City. There are so many avenues to stay connected with horses without riding and having one.
And you found a way. I mean, before we wrap here, I want to give another plug to the book. It's called About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse-Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball-Obsessed Mother. And for all you that are baseball-obsessed, my favorite chapter concerning that and your mom is called A Whole New Ball Game, The Most Exciting Day of Mom's Life. We're not going to give any of that away because it's toward the end of the book, and Jamie, you're going to love that chapter.
Right.
Yeah, as a baseball and a horse fan, you're going to love that chapter. This has been a thrill. Thank you so much for joining us and talking horses this morning. We really appreciate it.
I can't tell you how exciting I am. I mean, how exciting this has been. I have been looking forward to this. This past week, I've had like 15 interviews, television and radio. This is the one I was really looking
Yay!
Forward to. And you did not disappoint.
Well, good. We're glad to hear that.
The word is delightful, and that is what you are. And I cannot wait to read your book. And I suggest everybody pick it up as a Christmas present. It was something that, you know, Mike helped you with. And I love watching and reading your text messages to him. Keep them coming. You seem on this interview so sweet, but she's salty too, y'all.
She gets that from her mom.
Oh, well, I try to pick my audiences.
Well, we know you are. Thank you so much. It has been an absolute delight to have you on, and best of luck with the book. And I really would love to have you on again too, once all the interviews calm down, and come back on and we'll talk some more.
Oh, I look forward to it. And thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Jamie. This has made my day, my week, and probably my year.
Yay! Well, thank you all for joining me. Jamie and I will be back on Friday. Get your really bad ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We'll talk to you then.